Walk with me.
Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Thursday, March 28, 2013.
Take my hand.
Once again, the barbaric treatment of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, leads our news and comment podcast today. The hunger strikers report they're being denied drinking water. A little gem from the Peter B. Collins tax-deductible music archive. Motown's Four Tops, about 1970. It's called Still Water. And in civilization, at a restaurant these days, the waiter might offer you still water or fizzy water. You've got a choice. At Guantanamo, where it's reported that more than 100 of our prisoners are staging a hunger strike to express their outrage at the terms of their confinement and the indefinite confinement that many of them face. And finally, the corporate media is starting to pay attention to this story. Item one from ABC News, reporting that prisoners taking part in the expanding hunger strike have leveled new complaints via the Red Cross. The IRC has made a fact-finding trip to our offshore prison colony there in Cuba. Lawyers for the inmates say the guards have refused to provide drinking water to hunger strikers, and they've kept camp temperatures extremely frigid. This hot and cold treatment is something that the military can control. And given the tropical climate of this tip of the island of Cuba, to subject them to extreme cold and then, of course, let them outside, that can have quite a definite negative impact on a human being. One of the attorneys, Mari Newman, a human rights lawyer based in Denver, quote, "The reality is that these men are slowly withering away, and we as a country need to take immediate action." They filed a petition after interviewing Yemeni prisoner Musab al-Matwani by phone on Monday. He said that guards were refusing to provide bottled water and told prisoners to drink from tap water that inmates believe is non-potable. The lawyers say in their motion that the lack of drinkable water has already caused some prisoners kidney, urinary, and stomach problems in addition to the health effects of the hunger strike. Now, officials say this is bogus. The tap water is safe to drink. Navy Captain Robert Duran says, hey, I make my coffee with it. And I'm not there, haven't been there, I don't know if the tap water at Guantanamo is safe. But Dr. Stephen Zanakis, a psychiatrist, retired general from the military, believes the hunger strike and lack of drinking water sets up the prisoners for gastrointestinal infections. I'll say that again. Gastrointestinal infections and a quick demise. And he said that the 34-year-old al-Madhwani already suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder linked to his torture while in U.S. custody in Afghanistan, and could be worsened by the harsh conditions at Guantanamo. And item two on this front is recognition from my local paper, the increasingly conservative Hearst-owned San Francisco Chronicle, with a very strong editorial in today's paper entitled Long Legal Limbo. In his second term, it says Obama seems to have forgotten the promise he made in his first term to close Guantanamo. Not only is the facility still open, quote, but the United States Southern Command has requested nearly $200 million to renovate the facilities. And as we discussed in detail in the current in-depth interview with Andy Worthington, the journalist who has given the most comprehensive coverage of Guantanamo, this hunger strike has been underway for almost a month and reportedly is supported by more than 100, maybe as many as 130 of the 166 men currently held at Gitmo. Back to the editorial. Now the prisoners at Guantanamo are reminding Obama and the rest of the world of their plight. Dozens of prisoners have gone on a hunger strike, with more joining all the time. At least 10 are being force-fed through tubes. While officials and detainee lawyers can't even agree on the number of prisoners who are participating, officials say it's 28, Lawyers say it's more than 100. This is really progress, friends. Now, it's not in a news column. And that's an interesting judgment on the part of the Chronicle. They have not reported these details and the report of more than 100 participants in the news pages. And I'm not sure why they make that judgment, but on the editorial page, they are reporting what is out there. I'll give them credit for that. They go on, the prisoner's action should compel Obama and Congress to confront the question of what to do about Guantanamo once and for all. So, kudos, I believe John Diaz, the editorial page editor of the Chronicle. It's unsigned, but he's likely responsible for this editorial. And today, John Diaz, I agree with you. In other news, we're getting details on the murky origins of the Monsanto Protection Act. The language inserted in the must-pass budget bill that keeps the government running through the end of the fiscal year. And Anthony Gucciardi of Natural Society published online today a story about this, and he fingers Roy Blunt, the Republican senator from Missouri. And the New York Daily News appears to confirm this because they quote Senator Blunt speaking in defense of the Monsanto Protection Act and his relationship with the company. They're based in St. Louis. He says that the language that people decry as the Monsanto Protection Act, quote, what it says is, if you plant a crop that's legal to plant when you plant it, you get to harvest it. Wow. He's not talking about cannabis, is he? No. He's talking about the controlled, engineered, and genetically modified seeds produced by Monsanto, many of which are Roundup ready so that they can sell more of their nasty pesticides. And this insertion, which prevents any lawsuits in the future arising from problems from these seed products, is really insidious. And I'll bet there are dozens of ugly provisions buried in this bill that benefit some corporation or some wealthy individual who has access to a member of Congress. But all of this should be done in daylight, and it's not. Interesting, at the meeting of the BRICS in South Africa, that's the rulers of Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, they have decided to take on the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund by setting up their own World Bank. And I think this is great news. Chloe's pretty excited about it, too. She's barking in the background. Thanks, Chloe. Anyway, I have great problems with these world financial institutions. And anyone who has read Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine, a powerful book that shows how we've exported the hardline market economic principles of the Milton Friedman School, the Chicago School of Economics, and used it to force governments that get into financial trouble to do our bidding, to open up their markets when they don't want to dismantle labor unions and social frameworks, what are called social welfare, health benefits, education. That's how these systems work. And I don't know if they're going to call it the BRICS Bank or exactly what, but I think it's good for these emerging nations. And when I say emerging, I don't consider Russia and China to be emerging, but Brazil, India, South Africa. To see them flex their muscles and to say, we want a different order than that imposed by the capitalists in the United States, I think that's a good sign. Kim Jong-un, the fat young leader of North Korea, is practicing a kind of brinksmanship that is becoming alarming. And I'm torn about this because I think he's just a loudmouth bully. And you don't give attention to a bully. Ignoring them often is a better course of action. But he claims to have a crude nuclear weapon, and he appears to be reckless in his approach, particularly to South Korea. And in the last 48 hours, he has disconnected one of the last hotlines that was intended to prevent an attack by one side against the other based on false information or a perceived threat. I think we need a process here to try to isolate Kim Jong-un even more than has already occurred. We just signed a new extended military peace treaty with South Korea. So if the North attacks the South along the 38th parallel, we will be back in Korea, and the stakes could be higher than ever. And I don't pretend to know exactly the best way to deal with this, but I am being persuaded that we can't just ignore the bully, as much as I would like to. Steve Horn has filed another dispatch from Chicago, where the NATO III are in pretrial skirmishes with the court. And Judge Thaddeus Wilson has ruled that the Illinois terrorism statute is constitutional and set a trial date for these defendants in September. And as Horn reports, these men, three of them, are being charged with conspiracy to commit terrorism, material support for terrorism, and possession of an incendiary device used to commit an offense of terrorism. And as Horn points out, only obliquely referenced by Wilson in his ruling is the fact that two undercover police informants played a role in pushing the terrorism plot forward, potentially manufacturing it wholesale, and then slapping a label of terrorism on it. We know that there were two cops who infiltrated this circle of people, one known as Mo, and the other variously identified as Nadia or Gloves. Nadia is not further identified by name. And Nadia wore a hidden recording device while having a bunch of meetings with the NATO III back in May of last year, and the audio has been used as the evidence for the prosecution of the three. I know a little bit about audio, and it can be edited selectively. And one of the phrases that has surfaced is a reference to, "Have you ever seen a cop on fire?" And that is interpreted that they were going to use these Molotov cocktails to set some cops on fire. Well, when you hear a comment like that taken out of context, you have no way of knowing whether it's accurate or not. Today I sat in again for Angie Coiro on the syndicated program In Deep. I'll put up a link and the show file will be available sometime on Friday. We talked with Country Joe McDonald, the legendary musician and anti-war voice from the 1960s. And we discussed with him socially conscious music, protest music, political music. It's quite interesting. We also talk about some new artists on the scene, including a rapper from Seattle named Macklemore, who has a hit single out now talking about attitudes toward homosexuals, gay rights, gay marriage, etc. And the first hour of the In Deep program is devoted to a detailed discussion of the Supreme Court's oral arguments this week on Prop 8 and the Defense of Marriage Act. Over at Chevron Corporation, the board of directors has announced that they are cutting the bonuses for CEO John Watson and several other top executives. This is very interesting. It's in response to a string of accidents at the oil company's facilities, including a big refinery fire just a couple of miles across a bridge from me in Richmond last year. The bonus cuts were somewhere above 10%. We don't know precisely. And CEO Watson has been dinged on stock options for 2012 as well. Now, I don't know exactly how to interpret this. It could simply be a slap on the wrist, a way for Chevron to run some more greenwashing ads and say how much they listen to people. But in its best light, this is how corporate governance should work. The board of directors should not be in the pocket of the CEO. And compensation, and in particular bonuses and stock options, should not be a given and should not always increase. And Chevron did pretty well in terms of profit last year. But in addition to the Richmond fire, they had a blowout and fire at a natural gas exploration platform on the Nigerian coast in January of 2012. They lost four workers in a refinery explosion in Wales. They had an oil spill off the coast of Brazil that has led to a criminal investigation. And while the system is not properly used, I happen to believe that the limited liability corporation, run by an aggressive and independent board of directors that can fire the CEO and increase or diminish his or her compensation based on their actual performance, that's how it's supposed to work. The board of directors is supposed to represent the shareholders. And if we had true corporate democracy in this country, where the system worked as it's intended, we would not have CEOs making 80 times the wages of their average employee. We wouldn't have these huge stock option deals that really dilute the value of the shares of the average shareholder. Many other things would be either corrected or, in some ways, brought under control, at least much more than we see today. Now, I'm not going to go out and buy some Chevron stock. I don't even buy their gasoline. But if I'm interpreting this correctly, then I applaud Chevron's board of directors for taking this step. Our next news and comment podcast will be released on Monday. I'm going to take a 3-day weekend with the family. But before I go, Will Durst steps in with his views on equality in America and this week's debates before the United States Supreme Court. Take it away, Will.
Hey, guys. Will Durst here with a few choice words about the Supreme Court hearing arguments on gay marriage. Well, at least listening to, being spoken at, in the approximate vicinity of arguments on gay marriage. You never really know who's hearing what. Pretty sure Scalia had a powdered wig filter installed a little while back, ensuring that nothing past the 18th century gets through. And if Antonin can't hear it, then Clarence Thomas don't believe it's real. The Supremes are expected to weigh in on the Defense of Marriage Act and the legality of California's Proposition 8 sometime in June. But, you know, it doesn't really matter how they rule. Gay marriage is here to stay. All across the country, polls have turned around faster than crap on cable, and television has a lot to do with it. Turns out familiarity also breeds tolerance. Gay celebs such as Ellen DeGeneres and Anderson Cooper have encouraged kids to live their lives openly. And now that middle America has interacted with them, it hasn't taken long to realize that the gay community doesn't devote most of its waking hours trying to engorge the armies of sodomy while carrying pitchforks and wearing horns, like we were told. Most of the casual bigotry is dying off, literally. Now, sure, there will always be prejudice, stupidity, and fear, but it's easier to understand now that gay is just another adjective, like blonde or buff or stinky. When you say gay people, the emphasis is always on the people. And the only real difference between gay and straight is which way your head faces during sex. That's it. And the ability to assemble an incredible appetizer tray. It's only a matter of time before gay marriage is accepted. And then it'll become commonplace, until finally, it's mandatory. I'm calling dibs on George Clooney. For the Peter B. Collins Show, I'm Will Durst.
Hey guys, thanks Will. And you guys, thank you for listening. I'm Peter B. Collins. And that's Chloe, still barking in the background.
Happy trails to you, until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.